right. Wow, then we'll start the show. Got some good stuff tonight, I guess.
Maybe not.
Stuff. Oh, we do. I got some stuff.
Nice.
Bam! Give me a count, Joel.
2, 3, 1.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza.
Showtime!
Were you making egg foo young in the kitchen? I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no fuddy duddies that a Lincoln bat. For the streaming, go direct to DLNGS.org. And I see challenges at LinuxLink.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the castle's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 805 of the LinuxLink Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Alan.
Hello, hello.
And we have Joel.
Yeah.
And we have Flying Ridge.
From the Hughes Outpost Orlando Command, Smokin'.
And we have Joe.
Hello again.
And I gotta look for this fucking thing again. All right.
Somehow that doesn't sound G-rated.
Nah, I apologize. So I bit the bullet on my one laptop migrating to 1904, and this weekend I did the other laptop, my main one, and once again the process was very painless. I started it when I was working out, and then I would come back periodically after I started, like, right after I worked. Finished working out, and I came down a few times to see the progress that it was in, and I just had to answer a few questions along the way. I forget which one. I'm not sure if it was the X11 or Wayland question. I forget what it was, but anyway, it went really smoothly, rebooted, and I'm up running. What is 1904 Disco? What is it called?
Disco Dingo.
Yeah, Disco Dingo.
I kind of miss Bionic Beaver.
Well, you can still go back to Bionic Beaver. I don't really know what the... Oh, that's... I see
it's
it
got
now.
5.0 kernel.
So it, wait, it does?
Yeah.
I didn't even notice that. Yeah, it is 5.0 kernel. I was looking at the desktop image. They always release a desktop image to go with it. And I'm like... Yep. What is that? I can't understand. Oh, so it's a dingo.
Yep.
Head looking straight up with
headphones on.
Headphones, yeah. And I'm like, oh, so you have it installed too?
I installed it in a VM somewhere else. I haven't updated my laptop I usually use because I'm still using the Pinebook tonight. I probably will go back to my regular rig next week, I think.
All right. So it's what's that, Rich?
So you've been like daily driving the Pinebook?
No. I just
daily driving every Wednesday from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock.
There you go. you could if you didn't need modern web things.
Right.
But
so
anywho.
Dan, do you do an upgrade or a nuke and pave?
No, I just did a release upgrade.
Oh, okay.
That's what I did on board.
To update manager. It's what update manager -d, I think, right?
What's
update manager? The command is update manager -d, I believe it is.
No, I did do release upgrade. I don't know if there's an update manager -d.
There is. That's actually probably the supported way. You just did it through, like, a standard apt, right?
No, it's the release upgrade is an Ubuntu tool. If you look at ways to do an in-place, I mean, maybe Update Manager does it too.
Yeah, it does. It's probably just the graphical front end for what you just said.
It's graphical management. Yeah, I occasionally play around looking at their like Ubuntu store or the graphical. Just like I like to see, you know, what is now available. Which actually is kind of going to bring me into another topic if we want to go down that route. Unless people wanted to say anything about Disco Dingo.
Haven't played around with it a lot yet, but.
Yeah, so I know one of the things I did notice about the upgrade, and I don't know why this keeps happening, but Mumble was upgraded, and the interface, I don't know how to describe it, like the icons and the interface in general, it hasn't changed, like the content hasn't changed, just the look of it has. And I don't know if it's because Disco Dingo is using a different icon set or a theme or whatever that may have changed that. But, like, for some reason now, if it gets, like, when I switched off the screen, and I had this problem on Arch before running it in Fluxbox, which I believe is what I'm running. Yeah, I'm still running Flux. Am I still running Fluxbox on Arch? Yeah, Fluxbox. That when I would switch off the screen that it was on and come back, the mumble window was gone, and it was really difficult to get back. It kind of like minimized it. It wanted to put it into a tray, but I don't have a tray in Fluxbox. It seems to be almost doing the same thing right there. So what I did is I went back under configure in the settings. And under the user interface, there was a thing that said tray icon, hide in tray when minimized. So I unchecked that. I'm not sure whether that was what I needed to check before. But anyway, I'm going to see if that fixes it. So far, I've moved off and back, and it hasn't been a problem. But, you know, doing a release upgrade went smoothly. So, you know, when you're talking about whether I did it through Update Manager or do release upgrade or apt, you know, however want to do that. And I kind of briefly mentioned this last week in talking about the somebody who had posted on our Mumble site, our Mumble group, about what was that application? FFSend, Firefox Send.
You mean on MeWe?
Yeah, on MeWe, not Mumble. Yeah, what am I thinking? On MeWe. And how the documentation was primarily geared towards installing it on Ubuntu via Snap package, right?
Right. Yeah.
And now, I'm fairly familiar with Snap and Flatpak and AppImage. My opinion on those, like, I get it. I truly do get it, right? And it's been something that's been, like, one of the holy grails of Linux packages for as long as I can remember. You know, going way back, there was always, like when I moved from Windows to Linux, the Linux packaging system to me was very intuitive and a godsend, you know, like to have everything on your system installed from a central repository and be updatable that way and easily like manipulated was a far cry better than anything that was out there. Right now, of course, there were always limitations in regards to that, and those are probably the limitations that have been ballyhooed by many people over the ages. By far, package manager system like apt or RPM or Arch package system or Slackware's packaging tool with a centralized repository is light years, I think, better than just grabbing an application and installing it. So you have that. But, you know, as Linux got more popular and more people in it, you know, we did kind of become a victim of its own success, because, you know, people can't just run Debian. They need to run Ubuntu. And Joe can't run Ubuntu. He's got to run Linux Mint, right? And Joel's got to run Xandros. And Rich has got to run.
Well, no, I wouldn't do that, but yeah.
Rich, yeah, elementary OS, right? So, you know, everybody likes to settle on their distribution, and that's great. You know, that is great. It's beautiful that there's so many distributions out there that you have a choice. But the problem with that choice comes, you know, in regards to the application repository. So if you use something like Debian, Ubuntu, Fedora, or Arch, Gentoo, I mean, you have a huge application repository. Now, granted, maybe not everything's going to be in there, right? Mm-hmm. And some of that has been solved by, like, Arch user repository. I think Fedora has unofficial repositories out there, community-based PPA. Repositories. Yeah, PPAs was one thing. Although the problem then you end up having when you start going to non-official repositories is dependency management in regards to those two. And, you know, if you're getting FFmpeg or, you know, a VLC or MPlayer or, you know, some kind of media application from a non-official repository, when you need to do stuff in your official repository, like upgrade packages or sometimes like that, it can cause problems, right? You can have library dependency issues where, you know, some version of FFmpeg that you got from this PPA over here is using a library on the system that you can't now easily upgrade something else on the system because it interferes with that library. That's always a possibility. You know, there's ways to get around it, but it can cause confusion. Now I know that what was didn't Lindos have, remember Lindos, Lindos?
Yeah,
unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah, and wasn't they, so they had this package management system. If I'm not mistaken, weren't they trying to go universal with it? Or was it just that it was graphical and a nice kind of like graphical store front end? Maybe that was it, right? And I'm getting that confused with App Image, which used to be Click when it first started out, K-L-I-K.
Clicking around.
Yeah, so that had that. That was like, you could go to a website that had an app image. You could click on the app image, and it would download and install on your system, and you'd be able to run. So, like, App Image, Flatpak, and Snap all kind of evolved to solve the problem of many distributions and not being able to, you know, having issues with being able to package your application to support those many different distributions. Yep. Now,
well,
you know,
then there was also the LSB as well. I mean, the
Linux standard base.
Yeah.
Right. So I always kind of felt packaging kind of isn't necessarily that big of a problem if you have a large enough user base in your distribution and you're trying to go with an open source application. Chances are you could, if there's a package you want, you could build it yourself, or there's a person who uses the distribution, a member of that distribution's community, could build it and put it in a repository, and that's all fine and dandy, right? But again, you know, having been somebody who used to, I used to build Slackware packages, I used to install software from source, and back in the days when it was just like a configure, make install, that was generally easy. Now, a lot of times, as people are using different frameworks and languages other than C-based languages, it becomes a little more difficult and not so straightforward in building that. Like, if you were to go look at the steps to install FFSend by Source, it's not a, like, configure, make, install. There's other things you need to do. You need to have the Rust language. You need to use the Rust tools to be able to install and stuff like that and get it all running and package it up. So it's not as straightforward. Now, granted, if you can follow documentation, it's not hard at all, right? And if you have some experience and you do this on a regular basis, all right. But, you know, that's not the expectation for the standard user, I guess. And also package, you know, application developers, they have been complaining for a long time that, you know, having the package for a bunch of different distributions using different packaging management systems, and then additionally having to target different versions of that distribution, you know, like Ubuntu 16.04, 18.04, and 17.04, and 19.04 have different libraries in them, and your package may not, what you built in 16.04 might not work in 17, 18, or 19, and, you know, so all that. And these app image type application, these snap package, flat package is supposed to solve that. And so far, there hasn't been a standard that's been settled upon. Flatpak is Fedora, Red Hat kind of. It came out of the Fedora project. Snap is kind of is more Ubuntu. That Canonical developed Snap, and AppImage, like I said, is the oldest of them. There's a few others out there, but those are the three big ones. So now you would think that AppImage would have, having been around since like 2004, might have the largest quote repository, but it doesn't, you know. So I think the article I was reading that did a comparison of them is something like 500 applications might be in AppImage, which is, you know, that's nice. Flatpak is kind of in between the two, although the central repository had like 600 or 700, I think it was. Flatpak differs from Snap in that there's not a centralized repository, or you could have other repositories aside from the standard central Flatpak repository, community-based repositories, kind of like a PPA. You can just have a different repository and pull from there. So how many Flatpaks are actually out there? I don't know. So Snap has the most. I think it has over like 1,800 right now. Whether that's an indication of its popularity, you know, whether it's popularity or it's just you have a lot of people building Snap packages, or a handful of people building a lot of Snap packages, I don't know. But what
here's something.
Go ahead.
Good. I will say, you were talking about Lindows, which is now Linspire, and they're still around, and by far it's the only Linux distro I saw that you actually had to pay to download it.
Yeah, okay, there we go. That's a blast from the past. Still hanging on. But so one of the, I think the biggest things that always put, like, that kind of bothered me about these type of application packaging systems. And it kind of like OS X uses that with their application packages for OS X.
DMG files, yeah.
Yeah, so the way that operates is in a traditional like Linux package, like a dev package or RPM package, you have primarily the application itself, right? That's it. The source code is compiled into the object code, and you have and if you want to get the developmental version of that, you can include the libraries and the headers and stuff, so you could use that for building other applications. But it's typically just that application and that application's files and libraries and everything. And then the libraries that it depends upon are other packages that you would install on your system. So if you're going to install like package foo and it has library bar, like library bar is dependent upon library bar. Library bar is a different package, and foo would install both itself and that library, two separate packages together to run, right? So then if you have another application that depends on bar, you don't have to re-download that. It could just use the bar pack library that's already in your system. But with Flatpak app image or Snap, you have to bundle all its dependencies within that package. So if you had these two separate applications, each one of them in their packaging system would have the bar library inside that package, Flatpak or Snap or whatever, right? So you're kind of duplicating dependencies in these packages. The benefit is you should be able to take that Snap package and run it on any system that has Snap support, right? And not have to worry about whether the libraries exist over there or whether they're available for that distribution. So that's the advantage. But the disadvantage is it creates packages that are a lot larger in size. Flatpak has kind of, and I think both Snap and Flatpak try to remedy this by doing some of that extrapolation of common libraries, and that might be needed for most applications. Flatpak uses frameworks. There's like the Free Desktop and GNOME and KDE frameworks where you would build your Flatpak of the application off of, you know, using those frameworks. And that would mean that, you know, the Flatpak application would be dependent upon libraries and stuff inside that framework. And you can update both of those kind of independently, and they should still theoretically work. Now, I guess if you had a Flatpak that was built on version, like, 1 of a framework, and they were on version 15, maybe that Flatpak wouldn't work anymore. But, so it kind of reduces some of that bloat and dependency replication. And I think Snap initially didn't have that, but it may have that now, because when I install a Snap package, and I could be wrong because I'm not as familiar with the actual packaging system, but I can see that there are some Core and GNOME systems that are applied in there that I'm not sure that they're included in the packages that I installed, because I just decided to try. Like, I'm like, let's see what GIMP looks like, and I didn't have VLC on this system, so I figured I'd try VLC. Now, GIMP I already had installed, and it was in user bin GIMP, and it was version 2.10. And then when I tried installing the Snap package, that Snap package is installed, it's 2.10. Also, so it's the same version, but it's installed, and it's the path for it is under /snap. So, like, GIMP is user bin GIMP, but the snap path for GIMP to execute GIMP is snap GIMP. So if I do which GIMP, it favors the system one, opposed to the snap one. Because user bin is in my path before snap, I believe, which I'm going to assume that's the case. But when you get a snap package and you run it, right? One of the artifacts that I kind of don't like, so it's essentially it's like running an application in a container. What I don't like that is if you want to look at your disk usage using df, which will tell you how much space you have in your partitions, your mounted partitions and stuff, how much is used, how much is available, that you will see all the snap loopback systems in here. So where I used to have a root partition and my home partition, stuff like that, now I have about 30 other entries in here that are all snap related, and they're just device loopback part mountings for how this stuff all works underneath. I don't know whether Flatpak does that, and I know that's been like an issue that you can filter that stuff out, but I've heard people complain about that. Other than that, I mean, I kind of like the idea of getting more into that concept of the snap packages and flat packages and stuff like that, only because I mean, I like that portability in there, and I like It provides a laziness, I guess, I would say, overall. I mean, I don't want to... Sure, it takes, you know, it takes the responsibility of the owner and the, you know, the community of a distribution for trying to get that software into that distribution's packaging system, right, and maintaining it. So if a company or somebody has developed an application and they're like, they built a flat pack or a snap or even an app image, I mean, mm-hmm. I like having that. I guess I like kind of like having that choice now that I can choose to install that, or and especially if it's open source, I can go and compile it myself, or maybe it's in my packaging distribution.
I was going to say, in some cases, it wouldn't even be, it have to be open source. Like, I can imagine, like, a Dropbox using a Flatpak or a Snappack to deliver their Linux client, if they could. I don't even know. They do have a Linux client, I think, but there is actually something I'm moving away from Dropbox myself, but...
Well, no, I think, I especially think that where it has a really big advantage is proprietary software. Yeah. I mean, I will say that because, you know, I was just thinking here, when my hard drive went out on this laptop and I put a new hard drive in and rebuilt the system, one of the things that I had not rebuilt or put back on there at the time was the Ubiquiti Unify software. And I remember having done that the first time, how much of a pain in the ass it was, and then having to fix it when I moved to 1804, I think it was, or 1810. I forget which one of those had the MongoDB that wasn't really compatible. Like, it had made some changes and it wasn't working properly with Unify software, so then I had to fix that problem, and then I had to get it back on here about 2 weeks ago. What did I have to do? The power was going out here because I had to do electrical work and I needed to down all my systems, and I wanted to make sure I had a current backup of my Unify system and it was all set up and good to go. And so, noticing now that instead of having to install and go through trying to find out where the software is, where I need to get it from, how I need to get it installed, and whether it's going to run properly, or I have to figure out what that fix was for MongoDB to get it to run properly, I could have just installed the snap and everything would have been, you know, available within that snap package right there, that image. And it would probably made things 10 times easier, right? And if I wanted to, I could have just done that on my Arch system, which supports Snap, or on anything else, right? So yep. I think I like it. It has a lot of advantages, although my biggest concern is primarily resource related, that if you're trying to do, you know, use this on an older system, I don't think it's as efficient in how it would be handling resources on an old and for an older system. This seems to be, you know, again, we're coming to a situation where if you're running an application, a snap package might be more system and resource intensive than running it kind of from the package itself and native distribution install of whatever. I haven't done a comparison between the two. Maybe I should fire up GIMP locally, see what it's using, fire up GIMP and Snap, see if how much of a difference it is in resources. But that would be my only concern, because I'm like looking at it and saying, you know, the application, so the Pinebook, right? Pinebook that you had, that Rich lent you, that
yep.
That would be like, it would be nice if you could, and I don't know how, I don't know what the support is for Snap on ARM. How, that's a very good question I should look into. Because you look at that and say, if you could get something like Snap on there and install Snap packages, then you don't necessarily have to worry about your distribution that you've chosen having an application if you
get something similar to Snap Package working there. Now, I know Canonical really pushed Snap Packages for like server, desktop, and Internet of Things devices. So I'm assuming, again, that there is some kind of like ARM support in here. And what that entails, I don't know. But I don't think you could take a Snap that was built to run in like Ubuntu on Intel-based machines. I'm not sure that that Steam Snap is going to be able to, I don't think it's going to be able to run on ARM without it being built specifically for ARM. That's neither here nor there, I guess. But anyway, that was my exploration into packaging. I'm going to play around with it more. I used to be kind of like pretty opposed to these type of packaging systems.
You were dead set against like PPAs and stuff before.
I am still a little dead set against PPAs. Like I said, the thing I don't like about PPAs and where I figure Snap and Flatpak and stuff like that differ from PPAs is that with a Snap or a Flatpak, you're kind of it's contained, right?
Yeah, self-contained, yeah. It's so a self-contained you have your own libraries for your own application.
Right. So if something gets screwed up, it's only that application. But when you're messing around with like a PPA, like I said, that's where you run into, you know, mixing things in with your standard system. And if you screw something, you know, something gets screwy from that PPA and it messes with something that's dependent by a lot of things on your system, you get unexpected results. And cleaning all that stuff out of there can be a pain in the ass. And if you as you progress, if you upgrade stuff, you know, if I do a release upgrade, the first thing a do release upgrade does, or I do an upgrade like that, is it disables all my third-party repositories and just sticks with the main one. So if that person who put out a PPA did so for 1804, but not, you know, 1810, 1904.
Or not,
there's no guarantee that things are going to work properly, or you're not going to muck around, you know, not going to mess up something on your system.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Here's one thing. You talked a little bit about, hey, just how smooth it went to the upgrade to 1904, but I was looking up on itsfoss, where it was talking itsfoss.com.
Right.
Where it's talking about the 1904 release features, and now you can do you can live patch your kernel on your desktop. So it has the same features that the server now has, so you don't have to take your desktop down to do a security update that includes a kernel update.
I'm sorry, what was that? I missed
you
that
don't
last
have
part.
To, you can't, do not
can't
have
hear
to
over the
reboot.
Cat screaming.
You can live patch your Ubuntu desktop and not have to reboot it.
Live patch the kernel. What is that? What was our technology called? I thought, was that the thing SUSE came up with?
I remember something years ago and I played with it and it did work, but I think this is different though.
Oh. Or is it just called Live Patch? Maybe that's
Live Patch. Live Patch.
Yeah, live maybe patch just by Live Patch.
Yeah, live patching. Oh yeah. But so Greybeard in the IRC had posted that he hasn't played around a lot with flat packs or snaps or anything, but he uses Docker a lot, and that's another thing. We do Docker at work all the time. We're building containers. I've not used it like locally. Now that was another way I do believe I could have gotten the Unify software was a Docker image, and I could have mounted that and run that. And Docker is another, you know, interesting technology in keeping in containers and building
case
stuff.
Slices.
Docker works
case
in ARM
slices.
Also.
Yep, it does.
But you got to have something for ARM.
Right, the Docker images have to be made for ARM.
Anyway, the technology you were thinking of, Dan, before, according to Starship Tux in the IRC, is called case splice.
Yeah, I remember. Was case splice developed by SUSE or?
I thought it was Red Hat myself.
I also thought it was originally not being Oracle.
Well, Oracle
consult
now.
Consult the Oracle.
It probably wasn't always Oracle.
So the initial developer was CaseWise. If I'm not mistaken, didn't they try and... Wasn't it not like... There was a weird licensing around that, or the ability to do that wasn't like free?
Well, if it wasn't before, it probably isn't now, considering it's Oracle.
Oh, if anybody ever considers doing Oracle virtualization, just don't.
Alright, so as of July 2015, GameSplice is available for free on desktop Linux installations.
Yep, there you go.
So it's in Ubuntu. So I guess this is what Ubuntu 19.04 is using CaseWise.
Well, they call it Canonical Live Patch Service. Apply critical kernel patches without rebooting. Fixes are applied automatically without restarting your system. Reduces downtime. Keeps your LTS system secure and compliant. Included all as a part of Ubuntu Advantage support packages. Now that's the server level, but there is the community version is free for up to 3 machines. So it's something completely different, I think. But
well, you know what? I don't mind rebooting my system every now and then.
I don't either. Well, especially since most of my systems are laptops, unless they're Pis.
I could definitely advantage on a server if you didn't want to.
Mm-hmm. And like I said earlier, I was talking about, I used to use, in fact, I've been using Dropbox for whatever now. It seems like it's almost as old as Facebook and some of these other things. And they recently, as of the end of March, have now limited you to 3 machines. So if you have all these, like,
why
I
why do they
never,
care unless they're trying to get you to license it?
Because they're trying to get you to pay for it.
They're trying to get you to pay for it is what it is. You have to pay for $8.25 to get back to unlimited. And I used to keep like when I first started, you know, with all my recent stuff with 3D printing, I just was keeping my STLs in a Dropbox folder, and I since moved it to I'm going to hate saying this, OneDrive. Just because, you know, I'm using my Linux or Windows machine mostly for doing the slicing and all that. And I tried putting there's a Google's backup and sync, which will sync up a folder to your G Drive. All right. It and OneDrive were like competing with each other on Windows, which kind of sucked. So I just kind of switched. I just cut to the chase and went to OneDrive. I have a terabyte anyway on OneDrive, mostly because of our Office 365 subscription for our family. Which I might add, Office 365 does work fine in the browser on Linux. So, and I have used it in Linux before. If it matters, or if you're trying to use Office 365 subscriptions for your work.
Can't say I've ever used it.
Dropbox?
Dropbox, yes, but Office 365 now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But in other stuff... The Samsung Galaxy Fold is breaking after only 2 days. $2,000 phone.
That brilliant idea. How could that not? I don't get it.
Yeah. Well, apparently there's this protective coating that's on it. You know, that kind of looks like the little thingy that you can just peel right off.
But
you know?
That dissolves in oxygen.
Yeah, or something. I don't know what exactly.
Dissolves by touching it.
Yeah. You, but apparently people are removing that thing, removing that, and that's the ones that are breaking it. I'm not sure. They're still trying to figure out what's causing it. But even then, there is still visible creases on some casing. that. He's showing it on the video, and I could just see the crease, and I could not use that phone. I mean, that it's ridiculous.
Is Joel breaking up for everybody else or just
yeah?
I was letting up on the stupid keys.
Well,
I don't know. A foldable display just seems like a brilliant idea. Why wouldn't that work?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's new, brand new technology. You know, the only way they've ever used it before was just flexing it. Like, the curved screens probably use the same screen technology.
Yeah, you know, eventually they'll get it right. I wouldn't jump onto the first gen of anything. Unless you plan on, you know, unless you're making mad money on reviews, you know, whatever social media you're on, and you need the viewership, so you either get a, you know, demo version, or you buy one, you get a whole bunch of review, you know, you do a review video, you get a whole bunch of views, and then you sell it or have a contest for it and, you know, drive eyes to your site. But yeah, I would definitely wait for like Gen 2, Gen 3. I wouldn't jump on Gen 1.
Most definitely, yeah.
Wait for a more advanced convergence.
Right, right. Mm. And, you know, I'm not sure what you gain by that. And I know it's screen real estate, but it's still awkward. It's not an aspect ratio that you normally deal with. I mean, it works, but I'm like, I don't know. It could be good.
But well, doesn't anyone... Don't you remember the Asus had a phone and a tablet dock for the phone that they sold? And they never sold it in the States because Asus never was able to work out a carrier deal before. In the States, it's all about carrier deals.
Didn't Razer have something like that?
I don't know if Razer does, but I know they have cell phones on Verizon.
So... This is really three screens. You know, it's a left panel, right panel, and when you fold it closed, it's the top. So there's like six cameras on it. There's, you know, two or three touch screens, depending on how you're counting. They eliminated the headphone jack. There's no SD card. There's a lot of it I don't like. But the other thing, $1,900, that's more than most cars I have owned, you know, except recently. But, yeah, that's more money than most cars I've owned. That's like four or five of the first car I owned.
Okay, it must be Camho Day on Facebook, because I've gotten at least seven of those creepy friend requests from, you know, you open it up and there's a hot girl in it, and yeah.
Of course a hot girl wants to be your friend. She wants to be my friend too.
Mm-hmm. Who lives in San Jose is not friends with anybody else.
Right, right. Has no friends, no posts, but wants to be your friend. It's like, yeah, no.
Not just yeah, no, block.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. It's like, I got one from a guy. It's like, my phone was hacked. You know, I'm like, do I know you? You know, just because it wasn't a hot girl, like, maybe somebody mistaken. I don't know.
Now, what I haven't noticed of late was the ones who basically replicate your friend's profile. I haven't seen platform? Those before.
Facebook.
Oh
god, I stopped. I got on. I stopped at like 2.5 months. I got on briefly enough to thank people for wishing me a happy birthday, and it was every bit the shithole that it was 2.5 months ago. And I said, I just don't need that shit. There was like no positive posts. I mean, I blocked so many people, it wasn't even funny, and it still comes. Yeah, it's like
it's a good day when I only have to block one person who's replying to me on a news story.
I was just like blocking sources from everybody, and it's just like I don't need to be bothered with that shit. It's just annoying.
Facebook is kind of like the thing that, I mean, depending on what you do, it's kind of like the thing you do because you don't want to lose in touch with your family and stuff like that. And that's kind of what it is with me mostly.
Yeah, but I didn't even narrowed it down to that. And I started blocking family members because I just don't need the shit posts. It's just, and you get to a point where it's like, you know, the only way I can seem to get rid of these things is to just keep, you know, unfriending everyone. And then it's like, well, then what's the use of it?
Mm-hmm. You just close your account, but
no, I didn't close out the account. I'll probably pop in periodically to see if, you know, there's somebody, you know, had something interesting. And I do know some people's birthdays and stuff. I knew them already. So, you know, I'll pop in and say happy birthday and shit like that. But I have no desire to scroll through it because it's just shit posts. You know, I don't care about people's religion. I don't care about people's politics. I know I've posted shit on there to get rises out of people. We've all done that sort of stuff. But even that got boring, so I stopped doing it. You know, it's like, because there's only so much things you can say. You know, my politics and my religion is different than yours and different than his and different than anybody else's, so it's just going to be shit posts.
My thing that I do is I exercise the block button on a lot of things, especially not mostly actual friends, but mostly Facebook pages. Like if I have I have both kinds of friends, ultra liberal, ultra conservative, and if they're posting, and I block both ultra liberal and ultra conservative pages that just share stupid memes and stuff that are just stupid and pointless.
That's what I've been doing. It's just like the shit doesn't stop, though. It's like you block one and five more pop up in its place. I'm like, what do these people do for a living? Because you're on Facebook far too often. You know, I mean, I was considering myself on it for too long when I browsed it for half an hour in the morning. And that's basically all I, you know, I half an hour in the morning and half an hour or so in the afternoon while I'm having coffee or something. And it's just like, what are you doing all day? Because you're not working. That, or you're attached to your phone and you got to just like keep doing, you know, reposts.
Some of the shit posters, but then
maybe
I also
you need to get a better job,
too.
Alan, so you could spend more time on Facebook.
You know, I don't want to. I feel so much better now that I don't go there anymore. I mean, like the first couple of days, it was like, oh my god, yeah, I got to see what shit is on there now, and then it just became like, now I don't fucking give a shit.
Yep.
That's so much nicer.
MeWe seems to have a lot less of that, thankfully.
Yes, thankfully. But, and I tend to, you know, like I said, if I don't care what people say, but if you're going, you know, heavy politics, heavy religion, that type of shit, it's a block. I don't care how much of a friend you are. I just don't need to see that on my phone or on my desktop all day long.
Now, I will say this. I do miss Google Plus since it's gone.
I wasn't on that as much toward the end.
I wasn't either, but...
I mean, actually, what I need to look at is, and I don't know if anybody else is, did they get rid of all the people in your email that used to attach to it?
What?
That's a good question.
That was in Google Plus? The people that you...
Yeah. Yeah, you always used to, like, if you're in Google Plus, you always used to, you know, anybody that subscribed to you ended up in your
email.
Oh, you see
in your contacts.
In the contact list.
Right.
I wonder if they got rid of that, too. I hope they got rid of that shit, because, you know, that was another thing. It was like, okay, I don't really need to see these people, because I don't know a lot of these people. So why do I need to see you in my contact list?
See, the
that's
one thing
for me
is,
to contact people.
There are absolutely two things that it did right. I liked circles back in the day, and I absolutely liked the community groups. Those were much better. And also, too, the much more positive, too, is what I found. Like, I'm in the Facebook Creality. There's an official Creality group on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I posted, and this is going to kind of tie into my Thingiverse rant. I posted into where... I'm really getting sick and tired of downloading a STL from Thingiverse, and it doesn't fucking print. And I don't mean just because Joel fucking sliced it wrong. I mean because it has a void in it, or like I downloaded an STL of the Gunstar from the last Starfighter. Now, I haven't tried it yet, but I was looking at it in the slicer. I was looking at the layers.
I'm getting a bumper sticker that says, Joel, don't slice, homie.
Anyway. I was looking at in the slicer, and you can see whoever did the STL, they modeled a pilot and all the freaking interior pieces that you will never see. Which means the printer's going to print stuff that you will never see.
So, Joel, you edit the object.
Oh, I've tried. I tried. Oh, it's one of the more common. This is one of those high poly ones. So, luckily, though, it does seem to be manifold, so it might print, but then you're going to waste some. I'd probably lower the infill down to as low as I can possibly make it, and it be structurally sound, because it's going to have a lot of extra crap in it anyway, so it's not going to need a whole lot of infill for support, but. But and it's stuff like that, or they'll upload the STL and they never printed it.
Yeah, whoever that's uploaded bad. It never printed it. You know, Dor talks about this, that Thingiverse is kind of the Craigslist of 3D objects, where there's better sources.
Or the Facebook of objects.
Yeah. So there are better sources out there where they require you to have a print and photographs of the print to post.
Yep. Some of them, like I signed up for my mini factory. Yeah, well, luckily, like if it's structurally, like for example, if it's like something like a phone case or like a little dock for your phone in the car, something like that. That stuff generally prints just fine. It's more of someone had a game resource for The Last Starfighter, which there's the actual free game, so you can actually play the game that they played in the movie. And they basically lifted the 3D resources out of that and then converted it to an STL file and call it done. And they've done that with many, many games. So if it's like a video game or even a movie-related thing, and it was originally...
So Joel, you're mad because you got something for free and it isn't exactly what you wanted?
Okay, here's the problem. That's a wrong attitude. I mean,
I got the wrong attitude?
Mm-hmm. That's because, listen, if you're going to contribute to a community, yes, where the object is free to download, you should help the community by actually posting something that freaking works. That's like, would you...
Well, all right, so Joel,
What happens if Canonical posted a Linux... version
here's how to use Thingiverse is one, you need to look at how many people have downloaded it, how many people have said they made it,
right,
and what kind of commentaries on it, because if it's a complex object and you know there's no makes on it, I'm not printing it, I'm not going to be the first.
But you know, and that's the other thing too, where it's a little bit different with Thingiverse, is that thing you got for free is still going to cost you money in materials to print it. So that's
Joel,
my thing.
Serious, your printer uses less power than a 60-watt light bulb, and however many meters you're using of filament is next to nothing. It's really, I'll tell you the frustrating thing is the amount of time to do it. That's really... Too.
So, I mean, and it's a multiple thing. So, luckily, there's not a lot of them out there that are like that. Like I said, it's usually, like, if it's something like for example, if you download the STL for the Enterprise, it's a crapshoot whether it's going to print right, depending on where they got the 3D source for it. You know, because people have been modeling these starships forever because they do it because they love the series, they love the movie, they love the video game, and they're very good. In a lot of cases, they're almost as good as what they've used.
So I logged into Thingiverse, and somebody posted a remix of things I did, and you know, a printed picture. So. Seriously, what you need to do is go through. I'm not trying to toot my own horn. I'm just looking at things in my my dashboard. So it's like messages, like when people either that I follow have posted something new, or when somebody prints one of my objects that I've posted, and they say, you know, it's good or whatever. So yeah, you definitely. Mm-hmm. Need to go through and take a look at things and make sure it's got some good likes. And I'll tell you what I do. When I find something I like on Thingiverse, I look at who created it and see if they have any more cool things.
Yeah, I do that too. I do that too. But probably more importantly, though, the thing that kind of worries me a little bit about Thingiverse, and one reason why I haven't posted anything there yet, is, and I have to double check and see if it's still in there, but MakerBot, the owner of Thingiverse, had originally said that if you uploaded something to Thingiverse, that they own it.
Yeah, whatever.
So, you know, for me, I don't care because I know who really owns it, and I have the original CAD file or the STL file, you know, and yeah, you can't ever take that from me. So, but, you know, so, and yeah, I've used my mini factory, and that, in fact, that's the other thing, too. You know, a lot of people are saying, like, I've in my post in the Creality group, you know, saying, well, you just smacked what you got downloaded for free, something that didn't work, and then you're entitled. And no, I'm not entitled. All right. And I would pay somebody for something. I would actually do that if it was something very good. My mini factory has a lot of STLs that you can pay for.
That's it, my mini factory.
Right. I haven't paid for any yet because most of the ones I've looked at are like sci-fi-y stuff and stuff that just they're not worth paying for me yet. You know, I'll eventually find something I'm sure I'm going to want to pay for. But then again, it also comes to where I started doing a lot of my own objects anyway. Like I did, I have one desk in there from IKEA, and I should be getting the rest of the stuff tomorrow for my office. And I have the Alex set of drawers from IKEA, and I designed some trays to, like, put pens and stuff in so that they're not all rolling around the drawer and easy to find, you know, so that the pens stay in one spot, so on and so forth. So, and I could have gone to Thingiverse, and actually there is quite a bit of stuff on Thingiverse for that particular set of cabinets. There's like a printable like a label for the drawer so that you can basically slip it over the handle of the door of the drawer, and it tells you what's in the drawer. Okay, stuff like that. And other trays and stuff.
I got 13 designs on Thingiverse, but nobody, so far nobody's liked or made the Joel coin that I made.
You posted that to Thingiverse?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know what it is? It doesn't work. The lines on it are too thin for the printer. I'd have to fatten up the lines. Mm-hmm.
There is another, yeah, that you talk about lines and printers. That was one that I found a bust of Iron Man, and the neck was too thin in spots. And there was actually a void in the middle, but somebody did remix it and fix it. But yeah, I just haven't, because that's the other thing too. I'm trying to move away from just printing, like, oh, that looks cool. Download the STL, slice it, print it. I'm trying to get out of that a little bit. Because I don't want to print a whole bunch of stuff that's just going to sit around and do nothing. I found a really cool YouTube video. I should see if I can find it and post it in the IRC in mobile chat. I forget who did the video. It says, "Stop printing crap," is what it is. You know, so I'm kind of a lot of my 3D prints are out now. I'm trying to focus more on functional things. Like, I designed a bracket that I can take my I have a TP-Link switch, a port switch in my office, and I'm gonna take it, and get some 3M command strips, and just stick it on the bottom of my desk. That way, it's up and out of the way, and it doesn't fall off the desk. It's things like that, and cable management stuff for the desk that I'm gonna have in there, and just stuff that makes my life easier. Like, one thing I've debated on printing is there was an organizer for my AeroPress coffee maker. I might do that because I haven't found anything like that outside. Although, I may end up plunking down some cash on the new version of the AeroPress. They have a new version of the AeroPress that's designed that you can take with you, and everything kind of goes self-contained, so you can pack it.
All of them are designed to take with you.
Well, yeah, yeah, but this one, the way it's designed is basically everything kind of slots in together, and then you could put it in a mug, and the mug has a lid on it, so everything's in that, and that way all the stuff stays together in your suitcase or your carry-on, whichever.
So
Can I talk how Comcast is effing me?
Go for it.
All right. So last month, they said, all right, here's how it works. If you're with Comcast, maybe another cable corporation, if there's no competition or no real competition per se, they'll cap you at 1 terabyte a month. So last month we blew through the terabyte. They charge us an extra $60. Meanwhile, you can pay $50 more and have unlimited. But I understand the marketing strategy on that. So I was like, holy cow, I used a lot of data. I didn't think, you know, I figured whatever they said was true, you know? So this month I started metering my data. The Asus router allows you to do that. And so today I got that I used 100% of my data. I log into my router. I use 330 gigs. Meanwhile, they say I used a terabyte. Well, if you don't want the same dumb answer from Comcast all the time, you know what you do? Open up an FCC complaint. Go to the FCC online, fill out a complaint form. I uploaded screenshots of, you know, what they say I used and my router said I used. And you wouldn't believe the people, the quality of people that call you is completely different. And they're actually going to come out to my house on Saturday with a manager and a technician, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm still pissed, and Comcast still is the worst company in the world. I mean, absolutely, even if you call back the right extension, you don't get a call back for days. They just have no idea how to do customer service or TLC. It's just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell me, I say, hey, look, I'm on the phone with a guy today. He gave me a call back. He's like, oh, well, we verified it's correct. I'm like, yeah, I know. That's what the last four or five guys said. I'm like, what kind of network engineer are you? He's like, I'm a customer service security technician. I'm like, great. All right, so what kind of engineer are you?
Yeah, he went through two hours of training, and they put him on the phone.
Right. I said, look, I've been a network engineer for more than 20 years. Can you tell me what a non-routable Class C network is? Dead silence. I'm like, are you Googling it? What's going on, man? I said, he says, well, I told him my setup, it's a modem connected to a router, and I'm metering everything that passes through the router, both up and down, TCP, UDP, everything. He's like, well, you know, we can't see anything past your modem. I'm like, you don't need to see anything past my modem. Well, maybe you have an infection. I'm like, I would go through the router.
No.
And, you know, they do the same script. I'm like, dude, whatever it is, it passes through the router. Can we get past
give
the
me third
place?
Level support, please.
Right. And I'm like, look, when I sue you guys, I'm going to go with my credentials and facts and show it to the judge. So I don't know if everybody just rolls over and forks over money, but I'm really wondering if there's a class action lawsuit there. I really am wondering if I knocked on the doors of everybody in my neighborhood and found out what was going on. If they're having issues. Oh yeah, I went over last month. I gave another $30. Did you really go over? Because most people don't know. And I'm not saying the Asus router is the best router in the world. I'm saying it's a decent enough router that it's had continued support, continued software updates by the manufacturer for the last 4 or 5 years since I've owned it.
Thank you,
Joel, for that tip. But it also has plugins that you can actually measure all of your network traffic.
Yep. But not even plug. Isn't that just built into it, I thought? I don't know.
It's actually a third party. It's Trend Micro. It's Trend Micro.
But yeah.
But
I mean,
it's based on, you know, DDWRT. It's Asus WRT.
Yep. It's their port. Actually, their I would say expansion of it, because I think in a lot of ways the Asus version is superior.
So in all honesty, if anyone, I don't care if you have Comcast or anything, if you have a problem with your cable provider, I complained about two things: them overcharging me and the bandwidth. And, you know, I'm supposed to get 10 down. I checked when I got back to my apartment here. I'm supposed to have 10 up I had one up. I'm supposed to have 150 down. Pretty much the last 24 hours, I averaged 120 down.
Yeah. Yep. Well, see, we're geeks, and we check that shit out.
Right.
You know, my dad, he doesn't care as long as he can watch his YouTube and YouPorn or whatever he does. I don't know. He's my dad, and I don't really care. He can do whatever he wants. But anyway, it's, you know, and the other thing too, and it's kind of related because usually it is an ISP or an energy provider, but they moved from slamming you at your freaking door to slamming you when you're at Walmart and Sam's Club. Oh my God, is it annoying? They're like, "Who's hey, how you doing?" I'm like, "I'm all right." Well, who do you have for your cable provider? I'm not interested. Thank you. Goodbye.
Oh yeah, I get that. You know, Dish Network walking through Comcast, walking through Costco. Sorry,
right?
And I'm like, I don't watch TV. That just shuts off.
I was talking with somebody online, and they're like, and somebody was like, "Well, those people get paid to do that." I'm like,
"Darn right,
I don't fucking care."
And again, it's, I don't buy bras and panties, so I don't have to listen to the sales pitch.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just in this day and age, I don't know how a hard sell like that will ever work, because it's like,
all right, so
you can just Google to find it.
Here's the other bad thing about that. So I went to VMworld, and, you know, all sorts of vendors have my card. So I've got a meeting tomorrow. And I told the guy when he set up the meeting, I said, "I don't know. Your job may be just to get warm bodies into the sales meeting. I don't think we're interested as a company in your product." "Oh, just go to the meeting, blah, blah, blah." All right. I just want to make sure. Because the last one was cloud-based. I'm like, "We're not going cloud." And the guy's like, "Well, you know," he had three other people on the line. And it's like, "Well, we got nothing that." You know, he was polite about it, but that was pretty much it. Oh, hey, something I meant to talk about. Door-to-door Geek did the 24-hour marathon this past weekend, and to raise money for Eric Ardini. So there's still a GoFundMe. If you go to podnuts.com, and that's podnuts with a Z, not an S, and there's a support Eric link. I think it's on his front page. Also, if you go to flyingrich.com, you can find information there. It's the image with the 50 caliber shells in the $100 bills in a pack. So we're still looking to raise money for Eric and, well, Eric's family, I should say. Yeah, it's on the front of podnuts.com. So if you look at the menu, it's support Eric Ardini's family. And sleep is my nemesis, so God bless Door, because I wouldn't be able to stay up for 24 hours.
So no, I'll say, is there a mini PC show tonight?
You know, we do the mini PC show when we have something to say, when we have technology to talk about, or whether it's new product or something, you know, that we've hacked around with and, you know, have something to talk about. And unfortunately, I'm kind of didn't get a whole lot of things I wanted to do done, because my wife got a bonus and we're getting custom closets this weekend. I had to tear the old closets out, spackle and paint. So
that's like, I'm debating on, I should go to the gym tonight after the show, but I'm debating on doing that or starting to remove stuff in my office so that when the stuff gets here tomorrow, as soon as I get off work, I can start putting it together so I can get my office together for Friday.
So is anybody here like really Catholic? That I can offend. I mean, that I should be careful not to offend.
Pat's not here, and I thought he was, but.
Wait, do you. You work for a Catholic organization, right?
Not exactly.
Oh, but, I thought it was
Christian
Catholic.
Organization. Let me just
say. I was going to ask you. I thought it was Catholic. Do you have off on Friday?
Yeah, you know what? I don't. I'm not sure if I have off on Monday. I was kind of surprised. So this week is a Monday, Wednesday, Friday in Orlando on site. So I actually drove in Monday. Well, I drove in Sunday night, worked Monday, drove home so I could spackle, sand, and paint, worked from home Tuesday
Tuesday night, packed my crap and left.
That's a lot of driving.
Yeah. Yeah, it's 150 miles each way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only 600 miles to get into the town of where
you
I work.
You and the bird, right?
Me and the bird. I didn't bring a Monday.
Do you let the bird smoke in cigars in the car?
Look, there's no laws about what he can do with his free time.
Okay.
So let's just... He does have a medical marijuana card. So he does fly, but he isn't flapping his wings when it's happening.
There we go.
Does he share?
Yeah, no, he's the only card holder.
Outside the car, not the people inside the car.
Nice.
Yeah, what's so funny is the bird loves riding in the car. When he sees the travel cage come out, he gets so excited. He really loves it. I don't know what he likes about it, whether it's just that he's with me and close, or whether he likes moving. And I've panic braked a couple of times in the years I've been driving with him. I've always been afraid of launching him into the cage grill. And, you know, trees move and birds are used to it. So, you know, I've never launched him off the perch, which I've always been terrified of.
Elgin, please take off now.
Whoa. It's 10 o'clock. You're a minute early, man.
Am I? Oh, yeah. I am a minute early. Sorry about that.
Have a happy day.
Good talking with you, Alan.
Yeah, good talking with everybody. Yeah. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk to you maybe next week. Who knows?
Yeah, I wish I could come up for the cigar thing, but I'm going to be up that way May 19th in Ohio. So I'm already up for an event.
Well, the event sold out in about 90 seconds.
Oh,
3,000 tickets. Or actually, no, I'm sorry, it was 6,000 because it's 2 days. 3,000 a day.
Nice. Good. I hope you have a good time.
Oh, I have a great time at this thing.
Take pictures so we can be jealous.
Besides the fact that, like I said, I'll walk out with about 100 cigars.
Right.
It's just fun to watch all the people and, this is fun.
Nice.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, sir.
It's one of the things that the past week that kind of hit me a little close. Well, not close, but just kind of made me sad was Notre Dame, man. Jeez.
So that's what I was getting at. Did anybody have that song in their head? The Roof. The Roof. The Roof is on fire.
Yeah.
No, nobody had that in their head all weekend?
No, not me.
All right. So anyhow, I didn't realize it's Wednesday, and last time we talked was Wednesday. Thursday, Waze miraculously took me eastbound instead of southbound on the turnpike, which meant if I didn't turn south on 95, I was going to keep going towards NASA, which I did. I actually live-streamed the launch. The coolest part about the Falcon Heavy was the booster landing. Has anybody ever seen a rocket launch in person?
Nope, I want to, though.
Missile launch?
Is that that's probably close.
How close?
I was probably 17 miles away.
Because they launch sometimes from Tangier.
Sure.
Tangier over here. And I've seen that. I'll tell you what. It's completely different experience than watching it on TV.
Oh, yeah. Well, so when the Falcon Heavy went up, it was like the frickin' sun rising. I couldn't believe how bright it was. It was like looking into a welding torch without goggles. Absolutely crazy bright. So I could see everything. I could see the separation, the boost back, the entry burn. And then the landing burn was the coolest thing because one lit, then the other one lit. It kind of looked like they were hovering. I know they weren't, they were descending, but it just, because you're looking at it from a wide view, it just looks like the motion's much slower than when the camera zoomed in on them. Well, they were down for 10 or more seconds, and I'm like, you didn't hear anything because I'm like 17 miles away. Then there were like two pairs of sonic booms. So it was like boom, 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 boom. And you could feel it. like somebody pushed you just about. And then you heard the engines light and roar. So it was very cool. It was just really cool. That was probably the coolest part of it.
Did it land successfully?
Oh boy. So all three stages landed successfully. The center stage landed on the barge. I think it was more than 100 miles out to sea. But there were rough seas on the barge, and it fell over.
It wasn't damaged, was it?
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess it has been damaged. I don't think they're going to be reusing it. Maybe they'll reuse some parts. But at first, the first article I read seemed to make it sound like it fell off. But I read an article today that said it just fell over. And I had heard stories in the past, and maybe it was just rumor, that they welded the legs to the ground. I figured maybe they'd weld the strap, like a strap over the leg to the barge. But apparently they don't want people on the barge, period. Because I guess maybe there's still fuel and they don't vent the fuel. So they have a what they call the Octograb, or it's a treaded, it's almost like a BattleBot type tank, but scale it up a bit. And it'll drive underneath the rocket and grab what they call the Octaweb. But this isn't a standard Octaweb because it's a center booster. But they're probably going to be making modifications on that so it will work in the future for the next Falcon Heavy launch.
Sweet.
So cool stuff. Just it was real fun. I encourage anybody, if they are in the area, go see it. It's definitely not like what you see on TV.
What surprised me the most when we saw the rocket launch, like when you watch it on TV, it's like it blasts off and it's like gonna go on. When you watch it in person, it's like you just see like the glow, and then it like it just shoots right off, and like all of a sudden it's like way up in like in the atmosphere. Like when you watch it on TV, it almost looks like it's rising in slow motion. Like it appears to go a lot slower. Then if you watch it in real life, I'm amazed at how fast it goes.
The other cool thing is, because usually you're several miles away, is the amount of time that it takes the sound to get to you.
Yeah,
that too. It'll be a dot in the sky before you even hear it.
Right.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is such a neat
thing. And basically, just I know Everyday Astronaut has links to like where to go to watch, best place to watch, blah blah blah. You know, I was on, I think it's 528 is the highway. Just drove across Merritt Island, pulled over to the side of the road, and just, you know, got on the north side of the road and looked, and that a lot of people were there. You know, I just pulled over where I saw a lot of people. So I would definitely say if you're in the neighborhood, get out there, check it out.
Mm-hmm.
Was your bird with you?
No, that's because I think I drove in that day. It was a Tuesday, Thursday. I did kind of the same thing. I made two round trips last week also because I had things going on. Oh, my daughter, that's it. My daughter had a performance on Wednesday that was really fantastic. Her school, the kids are so talented, it's ridiculous.
That is awesome.
Cool.
Gotta start wrapping this up. 5 o'clock comes early. Joel's gotta get to the gym, right, Joel?
Jim. Think the Adirondack Trail is calling you, Joel.
Oh, I gotta set up another mirror and get the stream going to a mirror again.
Hey, Rich, I posted another printer in the Mumble chat, the 10S Pro from Creality. That looks pretty sweet.
Hold on, I gotta get that.
Yeah, out of the box with bed leveling. The power off stuff mine has, but it doesn't have the out of filament or filament break detection. This does. This also has a touchscreen on it.
Oh, okay. So it says inquiry. Is there an actual price there? Buy it at Alibaba?
You can buy it at Alibaba, but I looked at their own store at $650. It also, I believe, the extruder is a Bontech extruder as well. So top of the line parts in that. Double Z screws. Oh, Capricorn Teflon tubes. It's only slightly bigger than what I have, and I could add either the BL Touch or the ABL to mine. I probably will at some point. Just
how much did you say it was?
Easy. On the Creality's own store, it was $650.
Oh, six. Oh boy, that's still a lot of money. I mean, it's nice tech, but it's still
it's
a
tempting.
Lot of money.
It's tempting, but if I got that, then I would get I would probably get rid of the Mini, because this does just as much as what the Mini does.
See, I'm not sure how much something like that would add over my ANET, and I think there's upgrades on my ANET I could get, and I could just install the upgrades myself. So my ANET was $150.
I was going to say, other than the build service, because this has a much bigger build service than your ANET.
Realistically, if I got another printer, my go-to would be a Prusa.
Yeah, I kind of want a Prusa, too.
That without doing any more research than what I know at the moment, I would get the current Prusa.
Have you seen the Palette yet? The Palette 2, I should say.
Is that the SLA?
No, the Palette 2 is basically, you know how they have the multi-filament add-on for the Prusa?
Yeah.
It's basically the same thing, but for any printer.
Oh, shit,
so it's an it's an external device, and it goes ahead of the extruder, of course. And I'm not exactly sure how it works. I think it plugs into the USB interface on the printer. So that's how it does everything, and then instead of putting the memory card in the printer, you upload to the Palette 2, and then it will automatically do the splicing of the filaments based on how you have it sliced in its slicer software, which I think it's a web based slicer software. So, but it looks pretty nice. There's also, and something I haven't tried yet, have you heard of a 3D printer OS? By the silence, I'm guessing no. Basically, it's a website, and you can sign up for a free account, and then you can basically control your printer from that website. In order to do that, you either have to have it hooked up to a laptop, or you can also do a Raspi image, so that basically it will connect up to the cloud and you can control it from their cloud. Kind of nice things that you can do there is you can do the slicing and all that right in your web browser, and then just press a button, send it in, and send it to the printer. So not open source, but you do a lot of that with Octoprint. But
yeah, I don't know about that.
Yeah. So. The nice thing is you can do all the slicing in the web browser and all that, and I think it does the custom supports and stuff like that. But I'm trying to think. There was something else that it would do that Cura couldn't do. But to me, though, I'm more interested in things like the Palette 2. That Palette 2 is kind of pricey. It's depending on which version you get. It's the home version is like $550, and then the pro version is another 100, but it is nice, and I'd seriously like to do that, but I'd probably like to upgrade and have a different printer to go into. Because the other thing too is when you have four spools of filament, it can get expensive quick.
So realistically,
depending on what you're doing.
The only thing I'm interested in is maybe a dual extruder head with the washable support. That's really the only thing I'm interested in.
Right. Well, I was going to say, you could What I would like is if they had just a two filament version of the palette, so that you can have PVA on one spool and whatever you're printing on the other, and that way you can handle putting the splicing the PVA into line before it goes into the extruder. So because there's one negative, and this is something I didn't think of there. Angus was reviewing the CR10X, which is a dual extruder Creality printer. And the one thing that he mentioned is the ones with the dual extruders, with the nozzles are at the same height, of course. Okay. So that other nozzle could bang into your print as it's going around, depending on how you slice it, I guess. But, and what Angus usually does is when he's only printing with one filament on a dual extruder like that, he ends up taking the other nozzle off just so it doesn't cause any problems.
Yep.
So that's where the Audi Maker dual extruder models have it better, in that Audi Maker sucks the nozzle up so it doesn't hit your print. Because it's all the way you do the hot ends in the Audi Maker, it's basically a cartridge. So it's got what you basically can take, like if you need to replace the nozzle on one of the cartridges, you can pull the whole cartridge out, undo the nozzle out of the printer, and then put the nozzle back on and then slick it all back in. Or you can just I guess you could probably even buy another cartridge instead and just replace the whole cartridge, but and then fix the other one later. But just that's why the Audi Maker is a $3,500 printer. And we're playing in the 200 to 500 realm, so usually, maybe 800. So, anyway, all right, been a great show. Looking forward to, we're here a couple months away from the Southeast Linux Fest. I'm looking forward to going this year.
All right, here we go. I'm going to play out the promos. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you in 7 days. Have a safe trip, Rich. Bam.
Oh my god.
It's Hacker
Public Radio.
Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hi folks, this is Chatter. Jay Wisher, Honky Magoo, 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduk to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
The Jack Attack Podcast. Where chic,
oh dear,
meets geek.
Ones and zeros, ones and zeros, ones and zeros.
Powered by Linux.
Linux.
You buy fun. Recorded in Windsor, Nova Scotia. With your hosts, John Watson and Kelly Penguin Girl.
A girl?
A girl.
A girl?
It's the Jack Attack. That's the JAKattack.com. Time well wasted.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a
gone!
It's over. Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah. Where'd Joe go?
I'm here.
Ah, there you go. All right. How's your... Checked oh, wait, are you using your new standing desk yet?
It arrives tomorrow.
Oh, I thought you already had it. You had other stuff coming. That's... How much assembly?
No, I got the desk. That's a good question. I know, well, it's very simple, really. I mean, really, all you would have to do is put the frame together and then put the desk on the frame. That's it. There's no storage built in on the sit stand portion of it, which is why I had to buy storage elsewhere. You know? Not elsewhere, but other storage from IKEA. Right. I tell you what, the stuff you have to put together, the IKEA stuff is just solid. Compared to the cheap shit you get at Kate-Well at... Well, I don't know where you get it anymore.
I was going to say,
I wasn't going to say Kmart.
You know, I saw a Kmart store that was in operation. Still. Like, they're not around here anymore. Huh?
Not pretty. Oh, we don't even have Sears anymore. All of our Sears are gone.
Yeah, wow. That's pretty wild. All right, I got to close this down. Joel, say goodnight to everybody.
Goodnight to everybody.
Yeah.
We used
to
have...
Talk to you guys next week. Hey.
Four one, Sears, and they're all gone. Every one of them.
I don't know if there's a Sears around here anymore. I don't think there is.
Amazingly enough, the JCPenney's is...
Dun, 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 dun. Alan's here. What the hell?
Hello.
Get out of here, Alan. What are we doing? What's this garbage?
I know. I like to pop in every now and then, you know.
That's good. 2 weeks in a row.
Just to wake you all up, you know.
He just wanted to hear my Thingiverse rant.
Yeah, that'd be interesting, too. I forgot all about that. I got mine in pieces right now. I need to get a new hot end on it. There's something jammed up in there, and the throat above it. There's something jammed up in there. So,
I guess got some new brass ones and some new steel nozzles as well in the mail today.
I just put in stuff. I think they're brass nozzles is what I get.
That's the standard. Hey, it sounds like you got the radio on, too.
Oh, yeah, my Kiwi's on. Let me turn that off. It's a pileup coming in from Brazil on 40 meters right now.
Well, it's your receiver?
Yeah. PV8AL, I think it is, PV4AL. Papa Victor 8 Alpha Lima.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
I thought you were starting to do the McDonald's theme there. Da-da-da-da-da.
Alan's loving it.
Mm-hmm.
Were you loving it today, Joel?
No. No wife cooked. Nothing fancy.
No! No.
Nice echo. No.
Why do we have an echo? Where's that coming from?
Oh, I don't hear no echo. I think he's just joking.
No, there was an echo.
No, there was a little bit of one.
Hello! Wait, it disappeared.
Testing 1-2, 1-2. One, two. I hear it there.
Interesting.
My mic should be... I got two headphones on, so... Shouldn't be any feedback from my head.
There shouldn't be any feedback from my head.
That's what she said.
Nothing but feedback there.
Did you say feedback or feet?
Feed. Feedback.
Mm-hmm.
They got the AC cranking here. I'm in sweatpants and I got shoes on.
That's what she said.
That one didn't make sense, Joel. Just got the window open. It's nice and comfortable here.
Oh, it's beautiful outside. You know, it's warm, it's dry. You know, it's like just gorgeous outside.
That's a little on the cool side here, but I like it that way. So I'd rather be cool than hot.
Cool side stays hot? No, hot, wait. Yeah. The cool side stays cool.
That's the mixed DLP.
Yeah.
Until they foam shamed McDonald's out of it.
Foam shame, there you go.
So, Dan, can this episode be called Foam Shaming?
If I remember, maybe.
Do I have to, like, send you a text or something? Send you an email.
Subject only, right?
Or what? Is there something more that you would do in an email? Dan's a busy guy. I respect his time. What am I supposed to do? Right, dear Dan, as discussed in the show, before the show, please remember to include sincerely yours, Richard Keeves.
Dear sir, to whom it may concern.
Mm-hmm.
Good thing my wife's not around because I've been totally off the wagon. I think I'm going to smoke a cigar and have a drink, too.
There we go. Got Cigar Fest coming up in 2 weeks, I think it is.
What?
It was funny. I went up to Micro Center to buy some filament. And, I'm standing there in the checkout line.
There's this thing called Amazon where you can buy real good filament from.
Inland Plus is very good filament, thank you very much. And the other I bought was Eastern Wood PLA. But just the same stuff I get off of Amazon. But I'm standing there in the line, and there's a magazine rack, and there was a magazine, a Cigar Aficionado magazine in there.
Was Alan on the cover?
He should be.
No, you want anything in Cigar Aficionado, you got to pay for it.
Yes.
A lot of those reviews are paid for, I think.
I got a box of Romeo and Juliet's here. Did anybody see the video of me? Anybody see the video of me lighting the cigar with a $100 bill?
Did not.
No?
So you're Biff Tannen?
Yes.
Dude, you need to get the. I don't have a link running here because I don't have anything running for here. I'll find a cigar for you. You gotta, since you're like blowing out $100 bills and shit.
No. It was a movie money $100 bill. I got a stack of $10,000, but it's movie money.
It's funny money.
You mean you don't have a cigar lighter that looks like a 9mm?
Oh my god. Hell no. Yeah, I mean, I have one that's a Desert Eagle 50, you know, but.
Accidentally grabbed the wrong one.
Yeah.
Shoot off his nose.
But my favorite on that was the guy with the shotgun. He had like a squib load, and he goes to look down the barrel and it shot off the brim of his baseball cap.
Nice.
Dumbass.
Yep.
It's a very natural thing to like, huh, nothing happened. Let me look down the barrel, pull the trigger again.
Sure.
There we go.
Derp derp.
You want the you want this one here. Let me see if I can get the this will be in the mumble chat.
Now I gotta figure out how the mumble chat works.
Hey, if I gotta figure it out, so do you.
That's what he said.
Dan, did you make a mint cast room?
No, why? Where do you see a mint cast room?
Right above number 00.
Right. Oh, I
right
see
above, mint cast right above the Dungeon and Dragons.
That must be the other mint cast that they didn't include you on, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now, I see what you're saying, but no. I don't control this.
Oh.
Mumble server. It's Delwyn.
Okay, okay.
I would be scared to smoke a gold leaf wrapped cigar.
Supposedly you actually smoke it with the gold on the gold leaf on there.
Right, right.
And from what I've been told on it, it's actually pretty terrible. The cigar itself is pretty terrible.
I mean, drinking Goldschlager, look, it comes out the back. Yeah, I got it. I got speckled poop in a day.
Speckled poop.
Now, I've seen that one actually. It's like I said, it's a normal looking cigar. They just finished it in gold leaf. Last time I saw it, well, they went like $295 for it. Now,
yep.
The last time I saw it, it was $125.
Dude, I'll go to the jewelry store, ask them to do it for me. I mean, really, but I would be terrified to do that.
I guess it's just one of those things that, like, you know, if you can afford, see, it's one of those cigars that even if I could afford it, I could smoke one of them, I'd have to have another one just to say I have it.
Right, right, yeah.
Because there's some of the Gurkha cigars. I mean, you're looking at these cigars, they're like, you know, $750 a cigar. You know, and it's like, okay, well,
meh.
You know,
what is that, rolled in human flesh?
No, it's just Gurkha. They put out limited runs of things, and so a lot of collectors pick them up.
Okay.
And that just throws the price up really high. I have one that actually I was given. It's about $450 is what they're saying it would go for if I try to sell it.
But okay, so how long will it last?
How long will it stay good in the humidor?
Yeah, like that's what I meant. How long will it stay good?
Every cigar is different. Some cigars age very well, and other ones don't. As to one of these guys, I have no clue.
So how do you know if it's going to be like? How do you know when it's time to smoke it or sell it? You know what I mean?
You know, like I said, this one was given to me, so it's probably going to stay there because, like I said, it's too much money for me to smoke. I was at an event. It was a Gurkha event at the local cigar place I go to. And you get a ticket for, you know, if you bought, like, Gurkha products or something, you know, you bought, like, a box of cigars, you get, like, a couple of tickets. And the hilarious thing was there were so few people buying stuff. As long as you got a ticket, you won something. And what they were giving away were those $750 cigars. What? And I was sitting next to a guy, and, you know, his number gets called, and he goes up there, and, you know, he comes back, and we're like, "What'd you get?" And he's like, he shows it off. He's like, "Oh, there's another one." He goes, "Yeah, now I have two of them. I can finally smoke one of them." Because he'd gotten one the year before from the same show. And he's like, "Yeah, I couldn't smoke it because it's just too damn expensive."
Yeah. Well, riddle me this, Alan. I'm sorry, I didn't want to cut anybody else off before I launched into my question.
The $750 ones are brand. I think it's called His Majesty Select, and they were originally made for just like giving out to like kings and royalty and shit. Now they released it, you know, a couple, you know, one or two boxes out. They actually, about 6 or 7 years ago at Cigar Fest, that was actually one of the prizes they gave away. It was a whole box. It was like $15,000. that they, you know, there's like, this box is $15,000 worth of cigars. Only like 20 cigars in a damn thing.
And I'm sure the first that one, it paid the tax, right?
I have no clue. Didn't ask. Most of those people are so drunk they don't even know.
But
did I win something? I don't know.
I actually was standing next to a guy that won one of the grand prizes, and he was so drunk we had to drag him up there.
And that's when you swapped out a cigar.
The hilarious thing was, he came up on a motorcycle and he won one of these custom made. Every last couple of years they've been giving away these custom made, cigar cabinets with like a cool kegador inside of them. Okay. I was like, one side's a cigar humidor, and the other side's a kegador and like a little mini bar.
Nice.
That was one of the things he won. He's like, I can't get it home. I rode up here on a motorcycle. I was like, well, you can't ride that home either, because you can't stand, dude. But I interrupted, Dan. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
You can hear me, right?
I can hear you.
Oh, okay. All right. So, like, when it's, at some point you're going to need to either sell it or smoke it, though, right? Otherwise, it's just going to go bad.
It can rot or it will mellow. I mean, I've had like 10-year-old cigars that, taste really good. I've also had 2-year-old ones that taste like shit.
Right. I was going to say, if you need to know how long tobacco lasts, just watch Steve 1989 smoking the cigs out of the old MCIs. He smoked cigarettes that are 50 to 60 years old.
Yeah, well, you know, the tobacco will last as long as it's sealed and stuff, or it's kept at the right temperature. But yeah, you know, everything does decay. But cigars don't decay that fast.
Alan,
it's usually more of like the oils and stuff all sort of, for lack of a better word, mellowing together. And sometimes you get a really good thing, and sometimes you get a really bad one.
What kind of water do you use in your humidor?
I always use distilled.
Bong water.
No.
There you go.
In, what humidity do you keep your humidor?
I run about 72. Sometimes
really?
It's a little less, sometimes it's a little bit more. It depends on the temperature outside. I usually try to keep it sort of where it is. Like, I need to buy two new humidifiers.
I'm wondering if I'm doing it wrong, because mine's like 80 to 90% all the time.
That may be a little bit on the high side.
Florida.
Yeah. Well, even living in Florida, that's a bit on the high side. You may want to pull some humidity out of there, leave it open for 10 or 20 minutes, and let some of that escape. They sell, again, on this same website, they sell, they're called Black Ice. And they're basically like this little, like, jelly balls that, like, when you put water in them, they get bigger.
Oh, right.
And they're these guys are set up so that, like, when you put them in there, you should get more or less a good 70, 72 in that area. And they sell them in different sizes for, like, different size humidors.
The
Black Ice ones, I think you can actually, when you unscrew them, they actually will break up into, like, 4 quarters. So you can, it's not just one spot. You can, like, put them in each corner of your, if you have a smaller box, you can put them in each corner, and they work out really well. My larger boxes all have active humidification. All
right. So now, what about when you get, like, a box of cigars and they're all in a test tube? I mean, what do you do about that?
In the tubes?
Yeah, if they're all in a glass tube.
If it's sealed, most likely they got humidity in there. If you're going to keep them for a long time, I think you probably want to take them out. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are sold that way, but, you know, or some, I shouldn't say a lot. Most of them are just the cellophane wrap ones.
Yeah, so
I usually leave everything in it. Yeah, I usually always leave stuff in the cellophane. It's just, I've always had better luck with stuff in cellophane for some reason. Some people say the total opposite, but.
How many cigars do you smoke a year?
Nowhere near the 100 I'll get in a couple of weeks.
Right. I might smoke 2 or 3 a year.
Oh, no, I smoke probably about 2 a month on average. Some days, you know, hopefully in next week I'm going up to Carlisle. So Carlisle will be a more, I'll have some more cigars on that one. I go to Cigar Fest, it'll be, all day long smoking.
How long does it take you to smoke a cigar?
most of my cigars run an hour and a half.
Right, right.
A couple of them you get like 2 hour ones, but most of them are an hour and a half.
What I like about a cigar is you really can't do anything other than sit down and smoke if you're smoking a cigar, which it kind of forces you to relax.
It does force you to relax. I'm more, like I said, the reason I probably smoke as little as I do is because I tend to smoke only with people. Mm-hmm. I very rarely go out on, my buddy, he's, once a day, he'll sit on the back porch at the end of the day and, have a cigar and stuff. I usually can't sit still that long myself unless I'm around other people. See, I just get fidgety after, 20 minutes or so.
I'll pour, not a rocks glass full of Patron tequila, but I'll pour, two, three shots worth of Patron into a rocks glass, smoke a cigar, and sit out by the pool. And that's just fantastic.
Yeah, and it's more of a relaxing thing. Like I said, to me it's more of a social thing, but it's also a relaxing social thing too.
Well, if I had friends, I would do it with friends.
Well, find a cigar shop too. You may find a decent cigar shop that has a nice lounge.
There's a couple in my neighborhood here in Palm Beach. I mean Palm Beach in Orlando. I'm in Orlando right now.
Yeah. You find a good lounge on it. I mean, I've never run into anybody in a shitty mood in a cigar place. I don't usually strike up conversations with strangers and shit. But I have no problem sitting down and talking with people. So last two 3 weeks ago, or in one, and these two kids came in, first time ever smoking a real cigar that wasn't, the dollar store, shit you buy at 7-Eleven.
The White Owls.
Swisher Sweets.
Yeah, the Swishers or, the peach flavor. They're like, oh my God, that just sounds disgusting to begin with. But it was we just struck up a conversation, gave them a couple of hints what they should be doing. Because, you can tell, this was like their first time.
Somewhere else that there won't be a mad person? Carl's Jr. in Denver, Colorado, with the CBD infused burger. Yeah.
Well, that's only for one day, though. I saw that. That's only for one day. It's a test on 420.
Yeah, that sounds disgusting.
Oh. It's CBD infused Santa Fe sauce.
Oh, so
yes, cannabinoid.
Wait, CBD.
The oil, the CBD oil.
But that doesn't have THC in it.
It's a non-psychotic. Psychotic, is that the right word? But yeah, basically it's
psychotropic.
That's I can't pronounce this, so we'll go with your pronunciation.
Psychedelic.
Yeah.
Psychoactive hemp derivative.
Hey, Rich. What temperature does your wife recommend you run your humidor on?
Now I have the least sophisticated humidor on the planet. It's twice the size of a shoebox. It's just fancy wood, and
it's hidden, right?
No, it's funny because it's attractive. I was just gonna hide it somewhere. My wife's like, "What's this?" And I'm like, "Oh, I thought she'd lose her mind when she found out it was a humidor." She's like, "Oh, that's pretty. Put it over here where everybody can see it." I'm like, "Oh, okay."
Does she know there's actually things in it?
That's because it was pretty.
I have my humidors, I've got two of them in the computer room here. I've got one of them downstairs in the living room.
So
that doesn't count for the two or three that are in the bedroom that are the small ones.
All right, do you smoke inside or outside?
Outside, yeah. I would not smoke inside.
Yeah, see, that's the other thing. I won't smoke inside. I won't smoke in a car, that. Because if I smoked in a car, that'd be great, because I got like a 2-hour drive. But, I don't want that around.
I have smoked in the car, one of my older ones. Is just, you need to have a drive to do it, basically.
Yes.
So like I said, when you got something that's you're going to be an hour and a half plus long.
Like, if you go to Southeast Linux Fest, that'd be a perfect time for it.
Yeah. You got 8 hour, 8 hour drive or whatever, 6 hour drive. That's fine. But for me, Alan, even just driving back and forth to work, that's, you know, it's just not long enough.
I posted in the IRC, I got a guillotine for the cigar.
Okay. Those are neat.
It's actually pretty nice. I'm kind of shocked at how it was $10.
That's good.
Better than biting the end off, huh?
Well, all right,
nobody bites.
Or using a steak knife.
What I wanted it for is in case I don't finish a cigar, just to chop the end off.
You can do that. A lot of times the tars that go through, though, you'll end up with a more bitter cigar when you light it up the next time.
Yep.
Because a lot of the tars will start to crystallize, and you know, like if you get ever get tar in the end, you get it on your lips.
Let's start the show.
What? We can't have episode one of Cigar Central? We had like three episodes of CPAP
printers and home automation yet.
Do you put the cigar in your CPAP machine?
No.
That
would be disgusting. Although there's a couple of times I've actually forgotten to wash my face off real well after coming back and put the mask on. No, it doesn't taste like cigars. You're just used, like, you know, I have the, you know, a beard and mustache. All the smoke that's in that.
The microbes.
Dog's butt is cleaner than a human beard. I'm not sure if that's true or not.
That's what they said.
I usually end up just seeing... At that point, I'm like, I'm already in bed. Fuck it, I'm just going to sleep. Don't even worry about it.
Maybe you should quit acting like a bitch.
See, we can still have Peggy even when he's off roller derby in.
Is that where he is?
I don't know.
I think he's doing nudes of everybody on his block this week.
That's what she said.
Starting with his neighbor across the street.
The old lady?
Yeah, the old lady.
That could be interesting or really scary.
So we can make fun of Samsung. Ha ha!
Snapping screens.
Come on, it's supposed to work perfect for like 100 million folds, you know?
It's not an Apple product, though. Only Apple products work perfect, right? Not.